Did you know that 70% of all books, including those traditionally published, are sold online via e-commerce? If you're an author wondering how you can get some of that market share, this is for you. Hi, I'm your co-host, Carly Waters, and I'm here to tell you how writers can work on their author brand and build an audience and convert those followers into book buyers. Ever wonder why so many authors publish books and later say that they didn't sell as many copies as they wanted? It happens over and over, and we see it all over social media. Authors think it's a them problem, but not always. They just weren't shown the way. And I don't want you guys to launch a book and show up at book events and have two people in the chairs. I've helped clients launch client books to the bestseller list for 15 years and have built a six-module, 11-hour course with all of my knowledge that will give you the craft and book business information that you simply won't find anywhere else. And there's an app plus monthly Q&A sessions with me. 200 of you have already joined my new course. And as writer Siobhan Moore said, I'm halfway through the course and grieving that I didn't have this information sooner. There's really nowhere else to find it. Worth every penny. If you want the info that will change the course of your writing career, go to carlywaters.com/course to learn more and use discount code POD15. That's POD15 at checkout. That's POD15 at checkout over at carlywaters.com/course. I'll see you there.
Hi everyone, this is Cece. I am so excited to share that I am teaching my super popular Hacking Writing on a Line Level class in November. And this time, it's a three-day event. We'll spend the first 2 days learning rules and techniques that will help you elevate your writing. And then the third day will be dedicated for Q&A. This class is filled with examples, and I mean it. All examples, all the time. So you will leave with an invaluable toolkit to hack your own writing on a line level. Check out the link in my bio on Instagram for more information. I hope to see you there.
Hi there, and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm Bianca Murray, and I'm joined by Carly Waters and Cece Lira from PS Literary Agency. We'll be kicking off today's episode with our usual Books with Hooks segment, after which we'll go to today's guest.
We'll be taking a break from recording new Books with Hooks segments over the summer so that we can recharge our batteries and return fully energized in the fall. We'll still be critiquing two new Books with Hooks submissions each week, though, which our paid Substack subscribers will get every Tuesday through our newsletter. That's until we return with new segments to air in the fall. So continue to submit your queries to us through our website. In the meantime, we'll be kicking it back by playing Books with Hooks episodes from our backlist while still airing brand new author interviews each week.
Hi everyone, welcome to another Books with Hooks segment. Carly is going to tackle two query letters that were directed at her, and Cece is going to do the same. Carly, why don't you kick us off with that first query letter?
Dear Miss Waters, given your interest in women's fiction, I hope you will consider my novel, Delia by Design. Complete at 82,000 words, it is 99% mine and in a holidays meets HGTV and will appear to readers of Kate Claiborne and Mahari McFarlane. Interior designer Delia Deltoile business is booming, although it's not for the reason she'd hoped. Thanks to a surge in demand for office renovations, Delia is coerced by her domineering boss into a partnership with an IT consultancy firm. While she'd rather develop her own client portfolio than specialize, Delia changes her tune faster than the time it takes to swap out an accent pillow when she meets the consultant in charge, her longtime crush and family friend, Finn McCaffrey. Growing up in a working-class family, Finn has always believed that interior design is for bored rich people. But when promised a promotion that will help pay his father's escalating medical debt if the partnership is successful, Finn puts his opinions aside. Plus, he's all but forgotten the incident when he and Delia were teenagers that changed the course of their friendship. Before long, what starts as a professional relationship develops into something more as Delia's love for Finn reaches new depths and Finn rediscovers long-buried feelings. However, when someone from their past resurfaces, bringing with him painful memories, Finn suspects Delia's boss of stealing Delia's ideas for her projects, and they'll find that being together takes a lot of decluttering, and that the best things in life won't happen by design. Per your submission guidelines, please see below for the first 5 pages of my manuscript. Thank you for your time and consideration. I look forward to hearing from you. Sincerely, Kimberly Crow.
Awesome, Carly. Thank you. What was your take on the query letter?
So I really liked the first paragraph. I always like it when we get right to the bare bones factual things. So we have our genre, our comps, our title. Yeah, I think the Delia by Design, it sounds like an HD TV show. So I thought all of that was really on brand. I checked out the comps. I didn't actually know the comps, but I checked them out and they definitely check out for me. One of them was a UK author. The other was American. So I think that that balance worked out pretty well. So I just want to kind of get to the kind of premise situation here. So whenever the premise is built upon a romantic event, I feel like we have to know why they are forced together, why they are forced apart, right? All of that is so important to actually the built-in hook of it all. And so for this, it was okay. So she works for a business and he's in another business and these two businesses have to come together. So a lot of this is kind of business related. And so I wasn't really sold, I think, on why necessarily these two businesses have to work together or why these two people have to work together. Because the line is that thanks to a surge in demand, so therefore, you know, here we go, economics lesson, right? So if you have a surplus of something, there's a huge interest in something, then her company should be able to choose who they work with. But they're saying, okay, there's a surge in interest and therefore she doesn't have a choice about who she works with. Like that's supply and demand kind of 101. This hook really wasn't working for me in that sense, because again, if there is lots of opportunity out there, she should be able to work with, you know, whoever she wants. So I just wasn't clear on why exactly she had to be forced into the situation necessarily. And I just wasn't fully able to suspend disbelief. And in the next section, we have these business partnerships kind of coming together, as I said. So they both need something from each other, right? So we know that Delia needs to be able to spread her wings and fly. Finn, what does he need, right? So he needs to pay for these escalating medical debts, but it's all dependent on this partnership. And again, not really clear why these businesses have to come together, right? So I feel like that hook and that premise just needs to be finessed a little bit more. And maybe it is in the story, it's just not reflected in the query letter. So I would just put a lot more emphasis on that. I really like, I think it's the last plot paragraph here. I think this is good. So we get into why are they coming together, rediscovering long buried feelings, you know, someone from their past resurfaces, et cetera, and they're kind of starting to work together. So I think that part is good. I just need to know why are these guys smooshed together and just make that a little bit more clear. One thing that was missing in the query letter was the author bio. I wasn't sure if that was just because for the sake of the podcast, they didn't kind of want to put that in there, you know, obviously trying to preserve some anonymity, you know, it's totally fine. But just a reminder, if that was not intentional, to make sure that you do have an author bio paragraph in there.
Wonderful, Carly. Before you move on to the actual pages, Cece, was there anything you wanted to add to that quickly?
I want to say that I really like the fact that the author told us what the present day conflict was and didn't just rely on their past relationship. Oftentimes with this kind of query, authors do that, and this was not done here, and it was awesome. And I also missed the author paragraph. Please always include that unless it's for privacy reasons of the podcast, which Carly said.
Okay, great. Thanks, Cece. Carly, would you give us an indication of what's in those opening pages and then your take on that?
So we start off with chapter one and it says Delia. So I'm almost wondering if we're going to get multi-POV here, which if that is the case, then again, just needs to be mentioned in the query. Okay, but that said, so we're in Delia's point of view. She's at a spin class. She is sweating. She's getting a huge workout in. She's with her friend. They're talking a little bit about her working relationship and how she kind of has to get to the office and is doing that banter in a nice lighthearted way. Then we spend quite a bit of time talking about the spin class and her business model, how much she does or doesn't like her boss. Note, she doesn't like her boss. And she makes her way to the office. She talks about how she, you know, loves the design of the office. It's very glam, but she's a little bit more eclectic. So we're starting to kind of, again, learn a little bit more about her. And then on the last page of our sample, we find out that her boss has decided to hire an IT consultancy firm. And Delia is confused about that. And so that's where we are. All right. So in terms of my analysis of these pages, so I think number one, we are focused too much on our main character's appearance on the first page. So we start off in the spin class and it's a lot about like her clothes are clinging very tightly to her and all of that sort of stuff. And I just feel like I don't know if we needed that on page one. It takes up, to be honest, most of page one. So I don't know. I just didn't think we needed to get into the body stuff necessarily that quickly. Just mostly because it doesn't tell me that much about her. It just says, you know, she sweats a lot and she wears tight clothes, which everybody sweats a lot and wears tight clothes at the gym. And then we find, oh, I forgot to mention this in my summary, which is she is moving in with her friend, the friend that she was at the gym class with. And we find out it's probably because she did a breakup with her partner. And then we get into this kind of back and forth with her friend that she was at spin class with. And Steph says, that reminds me, here you go, Rumi. I leave for the restaurant room 4, but if you need any help moving anything, the doorman Joel is awesome. And so we get the sense that, you know, she's moving in with her friend during some sort of tumultuous time in her life. And I found this interchange a little bit confusing because I wasn't really clear on who is coming and who is going necessarily, because she says, okay, here's the key. It could have been that Steffi was giving the key back to her friend because she was at her place. Like, it just really wasn't super duper clear where the flow of people kind of were going and moving from and to, because then Delia says, thanks, I got rid of most of my furniture when Mark finally asked me to move in with him. I shouldn't take up too much space. So it was very subtle, and for a novel that so far hasn't been all that subtle, not in a bad way, but it just, you know, it's telling us what's going on. I just found that conversation a little bit unclear, so I would try to clarify that a little bit. But there's a lot of really good banter. There was this, you know, you don't take enough space if you ask me. You know, that's a nice thing for a friend to say, and I really liked that line to say, like, you know, you gotta stand tall, stand a bit bigger. So I really liked that. And again, really cute banter here as well about Delia's relationship with her boss. I thought they did a really good job with that friendship banter. I found that we spent too much time at the gym. So on page 4, we were still gathering our toiletries, getting ready to get in the shower at the gym. And I just found that to be, I don't know, a little bit long. So I would try to get out of that spin class as fast as possible, have your quick witty banter, you know, get the workout in and get to your office, right? Because even though we do get this kind of dramatic reveal on the last page about the IT consultancy thing, we're still spending a lot of time at the gym. So I would try to get out of that. One thing everybody asks me about, I'm sure CC, you know, we're always talking about this on Twitter, is, am I allowed to talk about the pandemic in a book, right? In a manuscript. So there's this really subtle line here that I think I actually liked, and I think this works. So the line is, long before the pandemic hit, I subtly mentioned going to school to get my certificate and then taking the exam to qualify for licensure. That seemed to have fallen by the wayside. I thought that was a really subtle, just, you know, name dropping the pandemic, but not dwelling on it. And I thought that was a really subtle thing. So all that to say, I know in the past we've been like, don't talk about the pandemic, but it's been going on for years at this point, right? So I think a drop here and there is okay. And then the dramatic kind of hook at the end here is, again, so we've decided to hire an IT consultancy firm. And she goes, I'm sorry, what? And again, really confused on this, because every business needs an IT company. And I'm just so confused on why we're so hung up on this IT consultancy. Like, what is the big deal about working with these people? Like, every business should have an IT company that they work with. So I'm just not clear on whether they are renovating them or they're going to be working in their office. And why would somebody care about IT that badly? Like, I feel like we're shoehorning this hook. Just something to be aware of. But overall, I think the banter is really sweet. I just think we need to really just focus on the hook and why they need to be smashed together in a good way, because the bodies will be smashing, I'm sure.
Awesome, Carly. Thanks. Cece, was there anything that you wanted to add on those opening pages?
To add to what Carly said about her reaction at the end, the emotional calibration seemed off to me. And one thing that I discovered is that if you try writing the same scene in a different POV, you might have better success at fine-tuning that calibration. So maybe the writer wants to try to write it in the third person. It's easy to sometimes get the emotional calibration off when you're really inside the character's head. So that might be something to consider.
All right, thanks, Cece. So for our listeners, an interesting episode that we've got coming up is with Mitzi Angel, who is president and publisher of FSG, and she is also Sally Rooney's editor, and she has a different take on pandemic books and talking about COVID. So listen out for that for those of you who are hoping for better news there. All right, Cece, will you read your first query letter for us?
Let's do it. Dear Cece, everyone knows monsters aren't real. Maybe if Lizzie Markham didn't keep seeing them, she wouldn't be in a psychiatric ward sketching them again. And her father, the Honorable Judge George Markham, wouldn't be arranging to, quote, Britney Spears, unquote, her. John Doe doesn't remember how he ended up the psychiatric ward's latest patient, and he's not sticking around to find out. He's got an escape plan. But everything changes when he glimpses Lizzie's drawings and they trigger a flashback of him battling one of those monstrous creatures. Before either of them can make sense of the discovery, Lizzie's monsters attack, and John's jaw-dropping fighting skills kick in. Hunted by assassins no one else can see, they escape the hospital and go on the run. Lizzie harnesses the torment of a misdiagnosed mental illness and fights alongside John. As their passions grow impossible to resist, their survival hinges on them figuring out who John is, where he's from, and why he possesses abilities that aren't exactly human. Best described as Jason Bourne meets Sumerian Deities, Them is an action-packed, fast-paced, adult, romantic sci-fi with series potential. Complete at 95,000 words, it will appeal to fans of J.R. Ward's Black Dagger Brotherhood series, as well as Shannon K. Butcher's Sentinel Wars. I chose mental illness to address the stigma and alienation people often face. Sensitivity and respect were my priority. Thank you for your time, Nancy Savard.
Awesome, Cece. Thank you. What's your take on that query letter?
To begin, I would follow the book hook cook method that, you know, Carly introduced us to and that I'm also a fan of. I think that, you know, the first paragraph should cover word count, genre, title comps. We do get that when we get to the last paragraph, but I would have preferred to see that way up top. Another thing, and this is a matter of personal taste, what happened to Britney Spears was really serious. And so I'm not sure that using it so informally is landing in the intended way. I would just revise that. And if it's something you want to do intentionally, then by all means, just I'm not sure that it's landing in the way that you want it to be landing. And then in terms of the plot, right, because that's the part that I most care about, as always, the line that says, as their passions grow impossible to resist, is this supposed to mean like their attraction to each other? Because I think it does, but then it says passions, right? And I'm wondering, like, is this a passion for something else? It just got me confused. While the hook seems very cool, it does concern me that the story seems to be writing on who John is, not who Lizzie is, right? Like, it feels like the major dramatic question is very much, who is John? And I find it hard to connect with protagonists, in this case Lizzie, when the major dramatic question is about someone else. Like, it's a personal preference, but it's something to be mindful of. I also, in terms of writing out titles and stuff, I always recommend using all caps or italics. It gets really, really distracting. I had to stop and reread certain sentences because I felt like some commas were missing. So I would just, you know, do a little bit of fine tuning to this because I do think you need it. And then I would also like to know a little bit more about the author at the end. But to Carly's great point in the previous query, perhaps you're just trying to retain some privacy because this is a podcast and everyone can listen to this. So if that's the case, that's totally fine. But if this were like a regular query, I would like to know more about you.
Wonderful, Cece. Thank you. Carly, did you have anything you wanted to add there? Oh, good. All right. Cece, what was in those opening pages before you give us a breakdown of your take on them?
So the story begins with Lizzie at her job. She's a tour guide in a museum. She's currently giving a tour to kids. We learn little bits about the protagonist's background. For example, the fact that she wasn't popular in school through the on-the-page plot. Like in the same example, she's observing the popular kids as she's touring the museum. We also learn that Lizzie was diagnosed with schizophrenia and that she believes she's cured despite what her doctors say. In fact, she stopped taking her medication 3 months ago and she hasn't had a hallucination in a year. Except, of course, she does see a monster. And there's a scene break, and then 3 days later, a new scene begins. Lizzie is in what she refers to as the psych ward. Her parents are there. They're meeting with Lizzie and her doctor, and through dialogue, we learned that her father had been hoping for a private meeting. But Lizzie insisted that her doctor be there. And Lizzie clearly has really complicated feelings for her father. The author did a really great job of adding emotional context there. So that's what happens. In terms of my take, there were things that were working here for me and things that weren't quite landing. So, for example, from the pitch, I'd say this seems like action-packed sci-fi. And so, I don't know, maybe add a countdown or something, like X days till the battle with blah, blah, blah. I don't know, like it didn't feel quite action-packed. And I'm mindful that we're in the opening scene, so you have to establish character and tone. But then, you know, maybe adding one little line, like a countdown, would accomplish that. You know, something that is working really well is that we're always advising writers to not say their work is funny in the query letter. We're always saying, let the writing speak for itself. And the writer here did not refer to her own work as funny. And yet it is. Like, I was chuckling on every single page. So that's great. I wonder if she could lean into non-derivative ways of describing the monster. So, for example, when Lizzie does see the monster, her hallucination, at least we think it's a hallucination, we see a 7-foot-tall, green-skinned beast with a thick T-Rex tail, Freddy Krueger claws, piranha teeth. Everything is a reference, right? Like the Freddy Krueger claws, the T-Rex tail, the piranha teeth. I think that it's basically like a mashup, like a collage, piggybacking on what the reader already knows. And I just feel like it's your job as the author to include, especially in the first 5 pages, original description. And I would also include a little bit more of sensorial details, like, was the monster's breath really hot? Did the monster smell like anything? Was the monster's tail flicking from side to side? I just feel like movement is also important to make the hallucination really, really real. I also, because there's a timestamp in this new scene, the scene break, the 3 days later situation I mentioned, I would start with the timestamp. You know, let's sing the timestamp song. I'm not going to sing it, but let's all sing it in our heads because I think that timestamps would help. I also want to compliment the author on doing a really, really good job of adding little bits of inner life. She has a clear point of view, and it's something that I've been able to pick up from the first page. So when her father says, I requested a private meeting with my daughter, you know, in her head she goes, ergo, no witnesses. And there's tons of little examples of this, of how the writer infused the author's feelings and thoughts in a really subtle yet effective way. So I think you really nailed conveying the author's thoughts and feelings about things.
Wonderful, Cece. Thank you. Carly, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No.
All right. Carly, would you like to read the next query letter?
Dear Carly, Cece, and Bianca, I have never been a fan of podcasts, so no one was more shocked than me that I've become an avid listener to The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. The insights and knowledge you each give to the writing community has fueled my querying and give me invaluable tips that I can't thank you enough for. I'm seeking representation for my debut novel, Be a Mighty Downpour, a multi-POV upmarket thriller coming in at 86,000 words that is steeped in its southern locale. At the heart of this is an homage to small-town life, how it molds its inhabitants, both for the bad and good. But on the surface, this is a tale about a friend's death and the secrets and crimes buried beneath the thin line that divides poverty and power. This novel has rich characters who could have stepped off the pages of David Joy's Where All the Light Tends to Go, has pacing akin to Lucy Foley's The Guest List, and will appeal to fans of gritty, roughneck characters and locales like those highlighted in Yellowstone. This novel is poised to be the first in a series of 4, each spanning a week's time in the month of February. 26-year-old Blair Woodford has returned to her grandparents' farm in the small town of Salt Ridge, Kentucky, to live with her older brother, Adam. Not where either of them thought they'd be at this stage of life, Adam's wife moved out on him just months before, leaving him brooding and alone, and Blair returned in the years following college to put the tragic disappearance of her roommate and childhood friend Hattie behind her. But as the 5-year anniversary of Hattie's disappearance looms, Caleb Davis, her older brother Adam's best friend, suddenly passes away, seemingly from natural causes, and those same familiar emotions begin to consume her again. Adam, however, is fixating on an uneasiness that something more is going on with his friend's unexpected death. He's heard speculations that the vices overtaking the hills and hollers might be seeping into the shinier parts of town, and that the money coming through the county might be tainted. His suspicions are magnified when he received an ominous letter from Caleb the day after his death, convincing him that his friend may not only have known something more about the dark hidden world of venality flowing through the town, but that may have led to his demise. Blair and Adam each navigate the week leading up to Caleb's funeral as lifelong friends flock back home to pay their respects, many adding fuel to questions surrounding the town's inner workings and how it might relate to Caleb. Yet each continues to mourn privately, not confiding their fears or piecing together the clues that continue to come to light. Each will need to entrust the other to decipher the difference between reality and rumor. Only then can they hope to find just how deep these roots run through their community to uncover the truth of what happened to Caleb before anyone else is harmed. My name is blank. I am a Southerner, proud of the place and the people who have made me who I am, and I actively look to find more novels representing that on my bookshelf. I graduated from the University of blank with a Bachelor of Arts in English and have worked for the last 15 years in marketing for memory foam mattresses and really delicious bourbon. I live on a small farm in blank with my husband, 2 children, and 3 pygmy goats. Thank you in advance for your consideration.
Thanks, Carly. And before we get your take on that, for this particular author, I have been stalking poor David Joy on social media, and he has agreed to do an interview with us at some point. So look out for that as well. All right, Carly, what was your take on that query letter?
Okay, I'm going to start with the technical elements, and then I'll get to thematic and plot elements. So in terms of kind of broad strokes advice to everybody listening, I don't like the opening line, and I'll tell you why. There are a couple reasons. There's the word never in it, right? I never. I don't like any time there is an element of negativity in a query. So the word never, so I never, right? We're talking about absolutes. One of the first words in this query letter is a negative word with negative connotations. So anytime, you know, you're tempted to do this, even though it's kind of a backhanded compliment, it's obviously a compliment. We love that you're obsessed with the podcast. We are also obsessed with our own podcast. But just try to reframe that in a way that doesn't bring an ounce of negativity, right? You don't want your name ever to be associated with any element of negativity. So avoiding any tone of negativity in a query letter is one of my number one tips. So that's just a structural thing for me. Okay, so next, we're a little bit on the long side. This feels pretty long to me, but I'll tell you some ways we can kind of trim and rework some things and move some things around. So I think we need to cut the line at the heart. This is an homage to small town life. It's not that it's a bad line or a bad word. It's just we kind of get that through the rest of the query. So I think you just need a bit of confidence to believe that your query letter is doing its job, right? We don't have to hammer home things multiple times. Just let the work stand for itself. So either cut that, put it in your synopsis, or find another place for it. Next, errors. So Lucy Foley, her name spelt wrong. I don't believe there's an E in it. I think it's just L-U-C-Y. The word locale is used multiple times, so just that repetition in a query letter is pretty unnecessary considering it's a short document. Another kind of structural thing is, so this novel is poised to be the first in a series of four, each spanning a week's time in the month of February. I like that you're planning ahead, but the most important thing to remember, especially if this isn't a kind of a classical, you know, or a classic genre type of novel, is that your first book has to be a success for there to be a series, right? Nobody really kind of gives anybody a series in terms of their first book deal. Of course it happens, but it's rare, right? So the most important thing is to write one really, 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 really great book and really hope that it breaks out, right? And that's how you get more books. Not planning a series doesn't get you books, right? A really huge breakout book that's super successful that more people want to read about, that gets you a series. So I think this person just might be thinking too big at this stage in terms of what you're pitching to me, right? You're pitching me this book, this one book. So series potential is fine. That's what I usually always say, right? This book has series potential. That's totally fine with me if you want to say that. But in the query letter, you're pitching me one book. Okay, next, we're getting into the body paragraph here. We have a lot of names. Okay, we have Blair, Adam, then we have Adam's wife, then we have Hattie, and then we have Caleb, and Caleb's last name is Davis, which kind of sounds like a first name, right? That's all in the first five lines. Way too many names. It comes off synopsis-y, and it also makes us forget who the main character is. And it's very, very, very important for us to be very confident about who that main character is. So just too many names there. So we got to kind of figure out a way to narrow this paragraph down a little bit and really focus on who it is you want us to focus on, right? This is your job as the creator of this world to tell us who should we be focusing on. So I think the second half of that paragraph and then the next paragraph are much, much, much stronger. So I really like that. So starting with, he's heard the speculations that the vice is overtaking the hills and hollers, starting that much stronger. And the last body paragraph is much stronger as well. So we're kind of figuring out exactly like how deep these roots run, right? That kind of stuff. That's really, really strong. But really just focusing on what it is that's exciting about this. And I'll talk about this a little bit more when we talk about the pages themselves, but I'm not convinced that this is an upmarket thriller. I actually think it's a literary thriller. And I also think that our comps are a little bit competing. So I'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to our pages.
Wonderful, Carly. Thank you. Cece, did you have anything you wanted to add? No. All right, Carly, so what was in those opening pages before you give us a critique of them?
Okay, so our title is Be a Mighty Downpour, and we essentially start with a prologue. It is not called a prologue. It's called February 6th, and it's a memory. So the line is, some memories carry more weight than others, and then we go back to a memory from when this character was 7. I pretty much think this is unnecessary. I really like that first line, but another reason that I don't love this opening is that it's from a child's point of view. So anyway, so that's our little child's POV prologue. And then we get into the rest of the material. So then we start with Sunday, February 1st, and we're in Blair's point of view. So we start with our character in the kitchen. Our character is on their second cup of coffee, kind of having a slow morning. It's kind of rainy, slushy, snowy, mix, cold, definitely setting the atmosphere there. So we know that she is staying with her brother. She talks about hearing her brother's footsteps. But again, we're very slow morning here. We're talking about putting toast in the toaster and waiting for the toast to toast. We're going through backstory of family and grandparents and why she lives where she lives. And then we get a line that says, close to the end of our sample, we were awoken in the night to the news that our friend Caleb Davis has died. So that's our opening material. And so my analysis of the material, kind of, as I said, going back to my query, is that I think this is literary. So I'm feeling pretty conflicted about the comp, Lucy Foley's The Guest List, because that is incredibly pacey. And so this person in their query letter is saying, has pacing akin to Lucy Foley's The Guest List. I mean, that book is a rocket ship on its way to outer space. And this is talking about, you know, a nice slow morning of, you know, we're making toast, right? So very, very different vibe. So I would definitely be taking out that comp, and I would be calling this book a literary thriller just based on what I'm reading. I also think the first line of the book should be something to the effect of, you know, we were awoken in the night to the news that our friend Caleb Davis died. I mean, this frames the entire morning, which is so important, right? Why is this morning different than all the rest of all the other mornings of your life, right? And that's why you're starting this book in this place. And so I just want to encourage this writer, especially if you want to go for pace, that we really need to kind of frame our morning a little bit more clearly in terms of, you know, why is this special and why are we doing so much thinking, right? Everybody has different reactions to grief and dramatic news. Some people are in a daze making their toast really slowly in the morning. Some people are upset. Some people have all these different reactions. But no matter what, we need to kind of understand this character's slow morning, I think, a little bit more, especially if this is going to be a thriller. So I think that that's pretty important. I would also get rid of a lot of the backstory. You know, we talk a lot about Adam and Mandy, so the brother and his wife, getting married the summer after Granny and Granddad died, right? Not that that isn't important and beautiful, it's just we're talking about very important real estate here at the beginning of the novel, and I just don't know that we need it. But coming back to the toast, as you know, I've been talking a lot about toast, and really, I feel like this whole section is an homage to toast. But I actually really love this bit about toast, because in a moment of grief, like, you're going to focus on something, right? And really, it's this toast. So the line that I liked was, standing from the table, I put a piece of bread in the olive green toaster on the counter, which too had come with the house. It was probably a fire hazard, as it had been toasting bread so long. But for some reason, the food always tasted better coming out of it. So I think there were a lot of beautiful lines here, but I think we just need a little bit of a reframe and a little bit of clarification about the fact that I do think this is a literary thriller.
Wonderful, Carly. Thank you. An author to read when you're looking at literary thrillers, I think, is We Begin at the End, because that's a literary thriller, but it's still incredibly fast-paced. Besides the fact that you want to keep underlying certain sentences, you still want to keep turning pages. It's the speed at which you're turning pages that's stopping you from underlining the sentences. Cece, did you have a take on that? No. All right, we're going to now end with Cece's last query letter. Will you read that for us, Cece?
Let's do it. Dear Bianca, Carly, and Cece, my name is Hannah Bonham Young, and I am grateful to submit the beginning pages of my manuscript, Next of Kin, and this query letter for you for feedback on the Shit No One Tells You About Writing podcast, which is a personal favorite of me. Next of Kin is a contemporary romance with first-person point of view completed at just over 61,000 words. Chloe is in a grocery store bathroom when she receives a call from Child Protective Services. Her birth mother, Connie, has unexpectedly given birth and requested Chloe be contacted as a potential next of kin care provider for the baby. Having grown up in foster care herself, due to Connie's struggles with substance abuse and addiction, Chloe is determined to provide a home for her baby sister. After an emotional reunion, Chloe begins the process of becoming a qualifying foster guardian as her sister heals in the NICU. Though she has found a successful candidate in each other category, Chloe fails to pass the financial evaluation, having just recently graduated and found work. This leaves her with two options: wait until CPS's financial reevaluation in January and see her sister placed in foster care until then, or participate in CPS's new initiative, Team Up. Team Up partners potential guardians who would otherwise be approved, but are missing one key element such as income or housing. Team Up
partners Chloe with Warren, a man her age who is trying to get care of his 15-year-old brother Luke, who is deaf. Warren makes a terrible first impression, seemingly annoyed by Chloe's optimism and frustrated at CPS's arrangement. They agree to cohabitate until January, giving time for Warren to find housing and Chloe to prove income. Slowly, their relationship begins to shift as their mutual attraction grows and their lives further intertwine. There is a gravitational pull between the two, a familiar history of pain that swirls in one another. They are forced with a choice: risk their arrangement for the chance of something more between them, or attempt to end it before it begins. I am, as of yet, an unpublished author, though I have been writing for the enjoyment of myself and loved ones for years. I have received awards for submissions in short story fiction, poetry, and nonfiction storytelling on a local level, and am currently trying to navigate entering into higher education to pursue writing whilst juggling parenting two boys. My goal is to write romance books through an intersectionalist feminist lens that celebrate empowered female characters, empathetic male characters, and a host of diverse LGBTQIA+ characters that emulate myself and the crew of people around me. All the best, Hannah Bonham Young.
Wonderful, Cece. Thank you. Will you give us your take on that query letter?
All right, my thoughts on the query letter. In terms of the first paragraph, I recommend writing the title Next of Kin in all caps. I think this is really important. I know I keep saying this, but I promise it interferes with readability. Also, while I do love diving into the pages to find out what POV the author chose, first person, third person, second person, it's not necessary to share that in the query letter. It's just taking up space. So I would remove that. I love that the author gave us title, word count, genre. Comps are missing, though, so something to consider. Is this intentional? I think comps are super important. They do set the tone, and they do tell me if something is for fans of this person or that person. I would begin the plot paragraph with the character's, the protagonist's age. So, for example, 25-year-old Chloe is in a grocery store bathroom, or 23-year-old Chloe, or however old she is. This is important because I want to know exactly how old she is. That changes the situation, especially if she's in her 20s. 24 is really different from 29, given what she's facing, right? Like, given the fact that she's going through this huge thing. The hook is very compelling. It's great. I would compress the paragraph, though. There's a lot of unnecessary detail. Like, for example, why do we have the line, having just recently graduated and found work? We don't need to know that in the query letter. It can be tempting to share details to add context, but stick to the big picture facts. In the following paragraph, there's also a lot of overwriting. So the line that starts with, there is a gravitational pull between the two. Do we need that line? Because you already established that they're attracted to each other in the previous line. So you're just developing something that you've already established. I would do a read through for grammatical errors. I did find one or two here and there. And very odd use of hyphen. I wonder if it's intentional, like a poetic license situation, right? There's a lot of words that typically aren't hyphenated that are hyphenated. So if it's not intentional, I would remove it just because it is distracting. Like, for example, loved ones. I don't think that is traditionally hyphenated. And if it is a poetic device that you're using in your manuscript, keep it in the manuscript. Don't do it in the query letter. We get so many query letters that it can be really important to just keep your query letter as simple and direct as possible. Yeah, these are my thoughts on the query letter.
Wonderful. Thank you, Cece. Carly, did you have anything you wanted to add to that? All right. Okay, what was in those opening pages, Cece?
So the story begins with a timestamp that reads June 14th. We don't know the year or the place. Chloe, our protagonist, gets a phone call from CPS. She's told that Connie, that's her birth mother, has just had a baby and that Chloe is listed as a potential caregiver. Chloe is visibly shaken and confused. Her reaction is to say her age and then to wonder why that was the first detail that she picked to highlight when there are so many other details that she could have chosen in terms of a reaction to this, you know, really, really earth-shattering news. And then Chloe is given a contact information to call should she decide to pursue the option of becoming a caregiver. Chloe has a flashback to the day when she was 4 and her mom didn't pick her up from school. That was the day she went home with the teacher, and it's the day that started her bouncing around from foster home to foster home. Until one day her mom did prove her sobriety, moved back in, but unfortunately that only lasted a little while because her mom relapsed and she had to go into foster care again. The memory makes Chloe realize that she has no choice, truly. She can't allow the same thing to happen to her sister. She needs to come to her sister's rescue. So I do have notes in terms of what's working well and what's not. What's working really well is there's a very powerful inner life here. As a general rule, I love inner life, and I think that the author has really, really nailed some moments in the story. So for example, when she's talking to the CPS person says, "I'm aware that it's been over 10 years since you've seen or heard from your mother." And through inner life, we find out that's not true. There are plenty of times in high school that she showed up, but Chloe never reported those times. So I think the author's doing an excellent job at telling us what remains unsaid. There's also some incredibly powerful lines, like for example, when she's in her memory thinking about when her mom didn't pick her up and her mom did manage to come back, but then, you know, relapsed again. There's a line that reads, "As if I was a sobriety chip and not a human." And it's just very powerful. So the author did a really great job with inner life and emotion. In terms of things that I think could be improved, dialogue could be compressed, and the flashback doesn't need to be there. These are my two cents, obviously. So for example, the entire first page could be compressed in two lines. It's something like, "I was halfway through my lunch when I got the call telling me that Connie had given birth. I hadn't even known she was pregnant." That covers the entire first page. And you don't use this exact line because it's not well written, nor is the character eating lunch. But I'm just saying you could add scene, meaning I was in the middle of something, with context in two lines. I also feel that, you know, about the flashback, I understand that we need the emotional context of this being really, really important for her, but we don't need to be in a flashback. Honestly, the inner life is so well written that I kind of understood already her emotional context. I wouldn't mind a line or three about squashing down a memory of being abandoned by her mom. Like, the memory could try to bubble up to the surface of her mind and then she could bring it back down. But we don't need to see the dialogue. We don't need the details. We don't need to know, you know, the color of the teacher's hair or whatever the detail was. And as a minor note, but I'm telling you, this tripped me up, I would choose names that start with different letters, unless it's important for the plot that they both start with the C. I kept getting Connie and Chloe confused as I was reading. You know, I was thinking to myself, oh, so Connie's doing this. Nope, that was Chloe. And so, yeah, I just think that, you know, if it's not necessary to have both their names begin with the same letter, it's something that I would watch out for.
That's it for today's Books with Hooks. Let's go to today's guest.
After spending our summer vacation this year in Europe, it opened my eyes and my kids' eyes to the power of language and finding common ground no matter who we are and where we are. One of the most important things to me as a parent of two is making sure my kids see other places in the world and are exposed to the languages they speak around the globe. They're in French immersion education, and I'm honestly already getting left behind. I took French class in school until grade 9, and I have a big gap in my learning that I'm ready to fill. And that's why I rely on Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the languages that you want to learn. I know my kids' language learning skills are going to explode past me, and I'm ready to catch them, and that's why we have Rosetta Stone. It's a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users in 25 languages offered. We're talking Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many, many more. There is fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. There are no English translations, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. There's an intuitive process. You're picking up a language naturally. First with words, and then with phrases, and then sentences. And it is designed for long-term retention. There is speech recognition technology. It is called True Accent. It is built in. It's a feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. There is super flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with a mobile app or on your desktop at your schedule. There is amazing value because you have lifetime membership for all 25 languages for any and all trips and languages that you need in life. That is a steal. That is 25 language courses from Rosetta Stone that they offer it for 50% off. So don't put off learning that language. There is no better time than right now to get started. Shit No One Tells You About Writing listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. So go visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
Fantasy writers, I hope you'll be joining me for the All About Fantasy full-day virtual retreat on the 28th of September from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Whether you write YA fantasy, romanticy, adult fantasy, epic fantasy, cozy fantasy, dystopian fiction, or any other variation of the genre, you won't want to miss out on this amazing day of learning dedicated especially to you and those writing in your genre. The lineup includes award-winning and best-selling authors, as well as literary agents and editors who specialize in the genre. You'll have an opportunity to submit your query letter for critique. The Story Engine, who is sponsoring the retreat, is also hosting an awesome giveaway of an All Things Fantasy storytelling package that contains a copy of each of their decks, Story Engine deck and deck of worlds, each with their associated fantasy expansions, the mythology, dystopian, and fairy tale boosters, valued at $237. All delegates will also receive discounts when shopping on the Story Engine website. Come and learn, ask questions, and even more importantly, build community. To find out more and to register, go to my website, biancamaray.com, and look for the All About Fantasy tab. I hope to see you there.
I am here with a very special person. Her name is Anamely Salgado Reyes. She grew up on both sides of the Mexico and Texas border. Currently based in the Rio Grande Valley, she writes about what she cherishes most: family, friendship, and finding magic in everyday life. Her debut novel is called My Mother Cursed My Name, and I am very proud and very grateful to say that she is my client and that I know the story of this book a little bit better than most books and most authors who come on this show, and I'm so thankful to be here speaking with you. Welcome, Anamely.
Hi, thank you for having me, and I feel proud and grateful to be your client. Thank you for choosing me.
We're having a heart moment. Okay, so I wanted to start this very special episode by asking Anamely to read from something that I received on March 17th, 2022. Anamely, take it away.
Dear Ms. Lita, I am seeking representation for My Mother Cursed My Name, a 77,000-word literary fiction novel about three generations of Mexican-American women and the youngest attempt to mend the dysfunctional relationship. Felicia Solivares is 10 years old when she meets her estranged grandmother, Olvido, for the first time. Olvido is nothing like Felicitas expects a grandmother to be. She is strict, cold, and unfortunately dead. And she has one request: to take her body back to Mexico. Being away from home, Olvido suspects, is preventing her spirit from entering heaven, or if you ask Felicitas, entering hell. Felicitas wants nothing more than to get rid of her grandmother, but she can't bring herself to tell her mother, Angustias, about the request. Angustias doesn't know about Felicitas' ability to see spirits, and fearing her mother's apathetic reaction, Felicitas wants to keep it that way. When the Olivares girls travel back to Texas to plan Olvido's funeral, Felicitas discovers that discreetly fulfilling Olvido's wish will not be an easy task, as it will require her to battle her mother's impulsivity and her grandmother's blunt disdain. In this battle, Felicitas is forced to face the truth about her mother and grandmother's fallout, the cracks in her own relationship with her mother, and her ability to overcome five generations worth of well-intentioned mistakes. Infused with magical realism, the Olivares woman's story is inspired by my own experiences as a daughter and granddaughter of strong Mexican women, and the fantastical stories my family told to explain ordinary life. I grew up on both sides of the Mexico-Texas border, currently live in Los Angeles, and like the characters in my novel, I'm always dreaming about going home. Per PS literary specifications, I have included the first 10 pages of my novel within this email. I would love to send you the rest if you are interested. Thank you for taking the time to review my query. Best regards, Anamely Salgado Reyes. Good thing I am not a voiceover actor, because I don't know how they read for such long periods without messing up.
It's really hard. Okay, so listeners, I want you to picture me in my office. You know a little bit about my background because you see me on camera sometimes. And I'm reading this query letter and I'm going, oh my gosh, I need to read more. So I scroll down and I start reading the pages, and the writing is beautiful. Like, it's off the charts beautiful. It hooked me right away. It drew me in. I felt like I was
I felt like I was transported into almost like, I want to say a TV show, but it wasn't visual. I'm talking about that voiceover that happens in TV shows where you have like a narrator's voice really strong in your head. And I'm hearing about the Olivares girls and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is real. This is already a book. And that's a feeling that as an agent, I very rarely get, and it's the best thing ever. So what I do is I request an Amelie's full. And so I read her full and a little hiccup happens in my life. I get COVID and I obviously am not working. I'm in bed. I am a mess. I just had a really, really high fever. My husband was sincerely worried about me. He's like, your fever needs to go down or I have to take you to the hospital. But thankfully it went down. And then on the first day that I was feeling still sick, but like a functioning human, I was like, I need to read a book because that's what I do when I'm happy, when I'm sad, when I'm sick, when I'm healthy, I read books. And I knew I had this full waiting for me on my Kindle app. And I thought to myself, am I going to be able to read? Because it's reading for work in this case. It's still fun, but it's work. So I thought to myself, am I going to be able to do this? And I promised myself that I would try and I would stop if I felt like my brain was still not functioning well and I couldn't do this querying writer's work justice, then I would stop. I promised myself that. Well, let me tell you what happened. I forgot I was sick. That is how good this story was. I forgot I had COVID. I only remembered when I stopped reading. I read the whole thing. It was amazing. And so I wrote to Annamelie, and because I'm an oversharer, I wrote, dear Annamelie, thank you so much for sharing My Mother Cursed My Name with me. I was captivated from the very first page. Your writing is absolutely wonderful. To give you a sense of how much I loved your novel, I started reading it on the weekend after falling sick, and your story was the only thing capable of making me forget that I was ill. Parentheses, I tested positive for COVID, which sucks, but I'm getting better. You've woven a story that is equal parts intriguing and addicting, as well as insightful and introspective. I'm not sure how you did it, but I'm so glad you found me. If you're interested, I would love to hop on a call with you to discuss your work, as well as your literary ambitions. And then I asked her about her schedule, and the rest is history. We had a call. Do you remember our call, Annamelie?
I think so. I was really nervous. I remember being nervous. I don't remember the actual call, like what happened during it, because my brain just like dissociates. But I remember getting the email saying like, oh, I want to speak to you. That was very exciting.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if it helped that you were sick. Like maybe, oh, she's not noticing all the mistakes. Well, eventually you did because you sent me edits. But I was like, oh, she's good. She's kind of out of it. She doesn't know what she's saying.
Honestly, it made it harder that I was sick because my brain wasn't at max capacity. And so a book that wasn't that amazing wouldn't have held my attention. Like if anything, the bar was higher for you, which is why I was so cautious of being like, if I can't do this, I'm going to stop. But I remember our call really well. I remember asking you all these questions, like just chatting with you. Like it was such a fun call. And then I remember saying, you know, I want to be your agent, but I want to give you time to decide. And you were like, can I decide now? And I was like, no, but you should take your time. Like, it's a big decision. You should talk to everyone that you sent this to. You should make your decision. And you were like, no.
I was excited.
And it was hilarious.
You're my dream agent. And you and said so, yes to me. So I was like, oh, I won the lottery.
No, I did. No. Okay, listeners, it's going to be really silly now because we're going to keep saying that. So then I sent you an email with like the contract and being like, next steps, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we started working together. And so I read the book again with a clear head and I prepare an edit letter. And my question to you is, do you remember that moment? Do you remember edits? Like, how was that experience? Because our listeners are all working on their manuscript and some of them are working with agents. Some of them are still securing representation. But what can you tell them about like getting that first editorial letter, that first marked up manuscript? Like, how does it feel? Like, what were the thoughts going through your head? And feel free to be totally honest, by the way.
I was both excited and nervous. And I think I was so nervous that I didn't open it right away. I think I let at least 3 days pass. I said, okay, now I can click open on the document. There were a lot of things that I had to change. I knew that that was going to happen. This is my first piece of literary work. And nobody had read the novel before you, just me, multiple times.
Are you serious?
Yes. That's why I needed so much work.
It didn't need so much work. Like that, the work that we did was normal.
Well, I don't know what normal is because that was my first novel. So
yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah, you don't know, but I.
But I expected that some things were going to have to change. And even as I sent it, I knew like maybe this isn't perfect, but I don't know how to get it to be perfect for it to be. I mean, nothing's ever going to be perfect, but for it to be to a point where it can be published, I know I'm going to need editors. Because you are an agent, but you also do edits. So I feel like you're also an editor in this novel.
No, I'm for sure an editorial agent. But I think it's interesting that you did all the work you could, right? Yes. Like you were like, this is as good as I can make it.
Yes. Yeah. At one point, you need other people. You need readers to then become editors. And then you also become an editor. And it's just everybody taking on so many roles. And it's truly a team effort at this point. I don't feel like it's just mine. But I'm glad that it's not just mine, that it's ours. And so, yes, once I started reading, then I got excited because that meant that I was going to get to write again. And I felt so happy when I was writing it. So I was like, I'm going to get that feeling again. Even if I was nervous before because I think, oh, it's not good enough. It's not that it's just not good enough. It's that it can get better. And so I saw it in a positive way. And yay, now I get to write again. And it's a whole new process. I think we did more than two rounds, maybe two or three, before we then sent it out for editors. Yeah, I think the third one was more little things, spelling, grammar.
Yeah. Were there any edits, whether from me or from Melanie, that you were like, I don't want to do this? Like, how did you feel? Because first of all, I'm shocked that I was the first person to read this and so grateful. And please know the quality was already amazing at that stage. I guess I'm wondering, like, it's exciting to get edits and there's so much positive. Yes. And I love that it was positively framed by your brain. Mm-hmm. But what were the negatives in that?
The negative was just the feeling of one, oh, it isn't that great. But that one's the one that went away faster. The second feeling of nerves, or what led to me feeling nervous, was thinking I won't be able to get it to the point that it needs to be. Because you can tell me what I could work on, but you can't write it for me. And I kind of wish you could. You could just rewrite the novel, make it good. But I thought,
then you wouldn't have the happy feeling of writing.
Because you told me about so many different things, like pace, tension, conflict and stakes. We upped the magical realism. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Because that was thanks to you.
I remember everything. I remember all the notes. My memory is impeccable.
I wish I could put your name in the cover as well, because so much of it was thanks to you.
No.
Listeners,
that, please know that. That's for sure no, listeners. This is not true.
Is also a writer. I didn't know how to do it exactly. And I'm also the type of person who drafts, like makes an outline to an extent, but then I kind of let the story just take me. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in the next chapter until I know what's happening now. Mm. And I have an idea of how they're going to get from point A to point C, but then what is point B? And I was just afraid that I wasn't going to find that point B. So a lot of things are just, I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to improve it, to improve the story. But then it all worked out, so it's fine.
I don't know if this is going to make you feel better or worse, but I want all our listeners to know that I got nervous too when I sent you those edits, because when it comes to things like the tension and the conflict and the stakes and the POV, because I remember we also worked on POV, like that I was pretty secure about, because I felt that I had done a good job of backing up my assessment.
It was so helpful that you gave me a very thorough explanation of what you were trying to tell me, because otherwise I would have been so lost. You just told me, like, the pace is off here and here and here and here, but you kind of explained you wanted to see.
I ramble a lot in letters. Like, I just ramble, right? Like, I use 50 words when five would suffice, mm-hmm. but like my letters are always long. But I think I would prefer it, honestly, because it's more information.
Yes, I'm understanding your thinking rather than just hoping to understand you.
Yeah. And you know, I think this is why we work well, because you like that sort of thing. And it's just a match. Like, these things are about a match. Not everyone's going to like my style. But, you know, when people like it, then it works really well. But I was nervous about the magical realism, because as you can tell, listeners, as you can tell by the query letter, and you will be able to tell by the jacket copy of the book, Felicitas can see Olvido, even though Olvido is dead. Right. So that's the magical realism that is very obvious from the back of the book. But I wanted Anomaly to infuse more magical realism. And I shared ideas on what it could be, but I was like, these are just ideas. You can come up with your own, obviously. And I didn't know, like being very honest with you now, how you would feel about my suggestions. I was like, what if she doesn't want that? And it would be okay if you didn't want it, because I would still love the book. It wasn't like a conditional thing. But I just felt so strongly that if we upped the magical realism, the entire story would benefit from it. And I was so nervous to share that. And then we had a call after I sent you the edit letters. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was honest. I'm really nervous. Do you think that I'm trying to make this into Encanto? Because I'm not, even though I actually think that this is like Encanto, but for adults, like the family and the magic. But I was really nervous that you were going to think that. So agents get nervous too.
I mean, I was worried that I wouldn't figure out a way to include it, but I didn't feel bad that that's what you wanted. And I was like, oh, okay. I see how that could elevate this story. It's just, then how do I go about it? And we talked about things that we could include or take out.
Yeah. We had a fun brainstorming session. It was the best. So take us back to like before we matched. Like what was the impetus for the story? Like how long did it take you to write it? Now that I know that I was the first reader, which I'm so honored and quite frankly shocked, because I assumed you had critiqued this with a million people because this was so polished and so good. But like take us back to that like origin story.
I started writing this in 2020, a very important year, very big year for everyone. I moved back home. I was in grad school and everything shut down. I was in LA. I'm originally from South Texas. My mom is still here. So I moved back in with her. And it had been a couple of months into me being here. I'm here again. Yeah, we were both at home most of the time. She still worked, but a little less than usual. Usually she's always working. And we were just talking a lot more. And my mom's the type of person who just repeats stories over and over and over again, even if I tell her, you've already told me this story. So I was just hearing stories about her childhood and her young adulthood and stories about my aunts and uncles and my grandma. And there were stories that I had already heard before, but I think I had the opportunity to reflect on them a lot more, because what else could I? I'm just sitting here. I can't escape this house. And so I started reflecting on my own childhood and young adulthood that I'm hopefully still in. I think I'm still young. And my relationship with different family members, how things are the same and different if I compare them to my mom's relationships, her past. And eventually I just started writing. And I'm not the type of person who likes to journal, even though that's very popular now. But I started writing something that's fiction. And I saw that I was being influenced by these conversations that we were having, even though this is not my family story at all. And eventually I wanted to know what was going to happen to these characters, because now they're taking on a life of their own. And so I had to keep writing. And I didn't finish because then school started again. I moved back to LA. I had to prioritize school. It took a while to actually finish the whole novel. I think I finished right before I started submitting query letters to find an agent. So it took a long time, but it's because I kept stopping. But every time I went back to writing, I felt so excited. I felt like that was a good sign. And at first, when I started writing, I was just writing for fun. I was very bored, like most people were at that time. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking, well, now it's kind of getting to the end. What if someone else wants to read it? Because I enjoyed writing it and I'm really enjoying rereading it. So maybe someone else will. What if one day my mom reads it? And then that leads to conversations, discussions of, you'll read the novel. And the women in the family talk through their past history to then get better, like improve their relationship. Eventually I thought maybe this could get published. And then that's what led to seeking an agent. But at first when I wrote it, I did not even think about publishing because I had never written anything before.
It's amazing. Like that, this is a testament to your talent, like to just raw talent. You mentioned how your own life has inspired this story. Are you at all nervous about your friends and family reading your
your book? Are you excited? Are you like half-half? What's the emotionality there?
More nervous than excited. I'm excited for people I don't know to read it. For people that I do know, what do they start wondering? Well, what parts are real and what parts aren't? And I will say everything is fiction, but emotions are universal. There are things that everyone experiences, and I can only write what I know. I can't pull out emotions out of thin air. I think those family dynamics and those reflections that they have, the conversations, I think those are inspired by my own family. Fiction I cannot see dead people.
That tells the truth.
Fortunately.
Ah, man, I was kind of hoping that part was inspired by true life. Do you remember what it felt like once we went out on submissions to acquisitions editors? Like, do you remember that process? And what advice would you give to our listeners who are going through the same thing? Is there something you wish you'd done differently? Is there something you would have told your past self?
I do remember that time. At that point, I wasn't feeling as nervous as when I was looking for you, my agent. This one, I felt very at ease, kind of relaxed. Like, this is Cece's time to shine. She's going to find someone. And if she doesn't find someone, that's not on her. It's me. It's the story. But at this point, it's fine because someone liked it. And again, you were the only person to have read it. So you had liked it. I thought, that's fine. At least one person likes it in this world. That's all I need. So if it doesn't get published, I don't even care anymore. I'm so relaxed. It's all okay. So the advice I would give to writers who are going through this process or about to go on this process would be to trust your agent and let them know what you need. Because you did ask me. You're always asking me, what do you need? And thank you, because sometimes I don't know how to just tell people I need this. But you asked me how much I wanted to know, if I wanted to know who you were sending it out to, I wanted updates when people were saying no or maybe. And I said yes to everything because I'm just curious, not because I actually felt the need to know. Because what am I going to do? Like, you can update me, and then I'm not going to go knock on their door and say, why did you reject the novel? I was curious because I'm interested in this whole literary world, how it works, what it takes to publish a novel. Now I know a little bit more, but I didn't know before. So I just want to know. I'm nosy. Like, sure, tell me all the information.
I'm the same way, though. I would want to know everything. Mm-hmm. I respect my clients who don't want to know. It's totally their choice. But it's not because you're going to do anything with the information. It's because knowing is better than not knowing.
But I think for some people, if they are the type of people who stress and who feel the need to control those, it might be worse for them to know, to be given all those updates, because they think, okay, it's taking a long time. All these people are saying no, and now there's nothing I can do about it. And maybe that's not good for your own mental health.
Yeah.
And that's why my advice would be to communicate well with your agent about what you need and what would be better for you.
For sure. No, I'm very grateful for our communication. And your process was quite fast for publishing standards. This is public information, what I'm about to share, because it's been announced. But we sold Anamelli's book to Atria, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster. It was a six-figure preempt. It was a very successful sale. We got lots of people. We had lots of interest, and everyone was excited about this book. And at the same time, it's still publishing. So it's still slow. It's not like, we went out with this and immediately the book sold. And so it was definitely a process. But I know that Melanie is your dream editor. And so I remember you saying that to me. I remember you being really, really happy with us finding her. And so I remember our call with her. Do you remember? We had two calls with her. Do you remember the first one?
Yes. I will keep saying the same thing for every call. I sometimes blank out. It's like I'm in a different time zone. I don't know where I'm at because thinking more, I guess, with my heart. It's more the emotions that I'm feeling, and my brain is just on autopilot.
That's okay. That's why you have an agent. Like, you don't have to worry about that.
I remember you telling me about her before we met. You spoke so highly of her, and you said, like, I really think she is the one. And so I was really excited to meet her at that point. I wasn't so nervous because you had already told me about Melanie. And yeah. Then speaking to her, I do remember getting that feeling of she understands the story and she cares for it. Like, this is not just some job for her. Like, it seems like she truly cares about making it the best it can be to then share it with the world. And I thought that was a good sign. She's putting her heart into this. So,
yeah, for sure. She did an amazing job of conveying the passion and like her vision for the book. It was really cool. Something really scary happened once you started working on notes with Melanie. Do you want to tell us about that?
I was back in school. I went out with a friend after we had left campus. And I left my laptop in my backpack and the backpack in my friend's car. And her car is kind of old, so the trunk didn't work. So we just left it in one of the seats. And the car got broken into. And we came back. And my heart just leaped out of my chest. Oh my gosh, no. The laptop.
Was your first thought, my book? Was that the first thought? My book.
Because I don't even care about the laptop. Even though I should care. Well, I did care about the laptop because it was a school laptop. So I thought, oh, the school laptop, but they'll help me. They have money. It's a school. Yeah. It's a university. They can figure it out. But my book, I can't figure that out. And it was my mistake to work on Word. I just prefer Word than Google Drive or any other website that's online. I don't know why I just do that. And I technically haven't learned my lesson because I still use Word a lot, but I'm trying to get better. I just like it. There's something about it not being online, but then I save it online.
I love Word too.
I save it online.
Okay. That's I was going to say, send it to yourself. Email it to yourself. Don't do this to us again.
I learned my lesson that day. But also, I thought, I'm going to say anything about my laptop or my book because my friend's car got broken into. So she's having a worse time than me. The book, it'll be okay. I have Melanie's notes. I have the draft that she looked at. I can redo it. I tried to keep a straight face, but I think I was still a little shocked. Like, oh my gosh, the book.
Yeah. Hopefully your friend just thought it was lots of empathy for her car. Like, and not, you know. But it's truly an author's, I don't want to say worst nightmare because you didn't lose all of it, but like you had worked on edits for so long and to lose that and to have to redo it. Like, so when you redid it, do you feel like you made it exactly the same or do you feel like, because I remember you sharing something about, I think it's called the Shakira effect. Am I remembering this right? So when you shared with us that the car had been broken into, you shared a story and I think it was Shakira, but someone who lost a creative work they had done. And then the one they produced in its place was even better. What am I remembering here? I'm remembering something.
It sounds familiar, but that wasn't me. Maybe it was Melanie who...
No, it was you.
Me.
Was it? I'm going to look this up later. I don't think it was Melanie.
Because then I would be trying to calm everyone down. And that's not usually what happens. It's people calming me down.
That's true. Okay, I'm going to look. Okay, I'm very curious now. I'm going to look this up later because I'm curious now. But so how was like redoing the edits? How was that?
At first, I was feeling really sad. I was going to have to do it all over again. And that maybe I had done something so amazing that I will never be able to do again because it's lost forever. And then as I was making progress on those edits, I realized I probably did not write something amazing before, and now I'm writing something much better. So it's okay. It'll be fine. If something truly was amazing, it will come back to you. And if it wasn't, then you have time and room for improvement, and something will come.
So wise. You're so young and so wise. Like, it's true.
It's just things I tell myself to not go crazy.
That works too. Mm-hmm. Either wisdom or mental self-care. Yes. Yeah. So your book has three points of view. So we get Felicitas, of course, we get Olvido, and we get Angustias. Mm-hmm. Were any of them easier to write than the others? Like, do you have a favorite protagonist?
Yes. Felicitas. She's definitely the easiest.
She's my favorite too.
She's my favorite. She's the one I relate to the most. I wore black in her honor. She wears a lot of black. Only black. I don't usually wear black. I wear warmer, brighter colors, but just today to feel a little bit like her. I remember that one of the things that we worked on in the first draft actually, was the point of views, that they kind of jumped around too much and it was hard to follow. Mm-hmm. And I think if I look back, most of the story was in Felicita's point of view. And we followed her the most. And now it's a little more even so we can get an understanding of each of the characters. But mm-hmm. I think that kind of shows that it was much easier to write from her perspective and put myself into this 10-year-old's shoes. Because she's 10 and I've been 10. And then Angustias is 27. And at that point, when I started writing, I was 24. So it's like, she's a little bit older and she's a mom. I haven't gone through that yet. And now I'm 28. So I'm older. And Olvido is, and now I forget if she's 65 or 62. I should know this, but she's in her 60s.
Yeah.
And she's dead. I also don't know.
Yeah. And she's dead. Mm-hmm. You also don't know what that's like.
And I don't want to say that I completely don't know what it's like to be 60s, because I try to write it authentically and show like, yes, this is a woman in her 60s. This is a woman in her 20s. And that's something also we worked on with Melanie. Like, would she speak this way? How would each of them sound? Mm-hmm. But I think it was easier mm-hmm. to think back to the past of like how I was when I was 10 versus yeah. how will I be when I'm yeah. in my 60s.
I love that. I love that perspective. Now that you're about to debut, so for our listeners, you are listening to this in July, but we are recording this in June. So today it's June 27th. So essentially Annamelle will debut in a month, right? Like, I'm rounding this up.
Yeah.
But so far, what has surprised you the most about publishing a book?
The marketing aspect of publishing. I have a publishing team publicist. That's part yeah. of Atria. We are a team. I am just the author, but to get to a book into a bookstore, it's a whole team. And there is a publicist and a marketing team. But they did have a meeting with me where they encouraged me to be more active on social media and to be active but in an authentic way, where I could put personal things, but also make sure to be promoting the book, trying to show my identity as an author. And
yeah.
I have been trying to be more active on social media, but that's not something that comes naturally to me. I only have an Instagram, and I didn't have it before 2020. Mm-hmm. I think a friend had made one that I never used. Mm-hmm. But I posted once in a while, rarely got on, and suddenly it's, oh, I have to, because that's just how things work now. And maybe at some point it was just the publisher who helped you with marketing, but now authors have to be more involved. And
yeah,
I think that involvement will have to increase when the book comes out and more people start to read it, and have to continue promoting it and creating that author identity online. So right now I'm just like waiting. Okay, I still have a month of being a bit more relaxed, but I should be more active. But that surprised me, because I didn't know that that was a thing.
Yeah.
I just assumed, oh, there's yeah. someone out there, not the author, just yeah. posting those things.
Thank you for sharing that. I love that. I wanted to ask you to recommend a book to our listeners. It could be a book that you're excited to read, one that you've already read. It could be anything.
It's a book I haven't read. It's an anthology, so multiple stories by multiple authors. And it's called The Black Girl Survives in This One. It's horror. I'm not a horror writer, but I do like to read horror. As Felicitas likes spooky tales.
Yeah.
That's also kind of inspired yeah. by me. But yeah, it came out in April, I think, of this year. But I haven't. But that's what I'm excited to read. I obviously like to read things in the genre that I like to write in. But I also like to branch out. And so this is completely different from mine, in that it's horror. It's a collection of stories. It's just like, okay, I can admire other people's work and talent, that maybe that's not my thing. So I'll just read. I won't write in that genre.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. Okay, so I wanted to remind all our listeners that we are going to have a very special edition of our book club. It's the Shit No One Tells You About Writing Books with Hooks book club. Back for, again, like I said, a very special edition. And we are going to dissect and discuss My Mother Cursed My Name. If you are interested in securing a spot, there are limited spots. Go to my Instagram page, CC Lyra Agent, and take a look at my pinned post. You have to pre-order a copy, send me proof of pre-order, and in September, after you've had like a good month to read the book, we are going to meet and have so much fun chatting about the book. And if you have questions for Annamelle that you'd like her to answer, you can send those questions in ahead of time, and I'll do my best to have them answered. But Annamelle, thank you.
Thank you
for joining me. Thank you for letting me be your agent. Thank you for letting me be a part of this amazing book. I'm hugging the book because that's how much I love it. And thank you so much.
Thank you for being my agent and for letting. I could have written this and then just it'd be stuck in my laptop, in my stolen laptop, because it would have eventually got stolen. And then no one would have read it. But you gave me the go of sending you the full manuscript. So it's all thanks to you. You're the agent.
You know that's not true. You know it's all thanks to you, but I will take the compliment.
Yes. It's your novel now.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, God. You just don't like attention. This is why you're passing it on to me, because you're a shy person. So you're like, you.
But also, I'm being honest.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And to everyone, go pre-order My Mother Cursed My Name. If you're interested, join our book club. I know I'm biased, but I love this book so much. And remember that even though I am biased, I fell in love with the book first and then became biased, and not the other way around. So you know I'm being honest when I say it's a magical, amazing story. And follow Annamelle on Instagram. Her handle is at Annamelle Salgado. So AnnamelleSalgado. I did that closing my eyes, so I hope I did it right.
Very impressive. And if you still can't spell it, you can just look up My Mother Cursed My Name and my name will pop up, and then you can type in my name.
Yeah. That is much smarter. Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A reminder that this is an unscripted program and our conversations have been edited and condensed and is not a full picture of our feedback or conversation directly with each author. As always, refer back to our written notes for the fulsome picture. Carly Waters and CC Lyra are agents at PS Literary Agency, but their work on this podcast is not affiliated with the agency, and the views expressed by Carly and CC on this podcast are solely that of them as podcast co-hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, policies, or position of PS Literary Agency. A reminder about all the ways that you can support us as a show: rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, tell your writing friends about us. We'd love to help as many writers as possible. And follow us on our Substack newsletter. Get our stacked newsletter on a weekly basis, bonus videos, articles, essays, advice, and more. You can find it at theshitaboutwriting.substack.com. That's theshitaboutwriting.substack.com.
And that's it for today's episode. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes.
Did you know that 70% of all books, including those traditionally published, are sold online via e-commerce? If you're an author wondering how you can get some of that market share, this is for you. Hi, I'm your co-host, Carly Waters. And I'm here to tell you how writers can work on their author brand and build an audience and convert those followers into book buyers. Ever wonder why so many authors publish books and later say that they didn't sell as many copies as they wanted? It happens over and over. And we see it all over social media. Authors think it's a them problem, but not always. They just weren't shown the way. And I don't want you guys to launch a book and show up at book events and have two people in the chairs. I've helped clients launch client books to the bestseller list for 15 years and have built a 6-module, 11-hour course with all of my knowledge that will give you the craft and book business information that you simply won't find anywhere else. And there's an app plus monthly Q&A sessions with me. 200 of you have already joined my new course. And as writer Siobhan Moore said, I'm halfway through the course and grieving that I didn't have this information sooner. There's really nowhere else to find it. Worth every penny. If you want the info that will change the course of your writing career, go to carlywaters.com/course to learn more and use discount code POD15, that's POD15 at checkout. That's POD15 at checkout over at carlywaters.com/course. I'll see you there.
Hi, everyone. This is Cece. I am so excited to share that I am teaching my super popular Hacking Writing on a Line Level class in November. And this time, it's a 3-day event. We'll spend the first 2 days learning rules and techniques that will help you elevate your writing. And then the third day will be dedicated for Q&A. This class is filled with examples, and I mean it, all examples all the time. So you will leave with an invaluable toolkit to hack your own writing on a line level. Check out the link in my bio on Instagram for more information. I hope to see you there.